Are you tired of spending countless hours in the kitchen every week trying to figure out what to make and constantly overspending on takeout? My guide, Well Prepped, is here to revolutionize your mealtime routine by offering you the perfect solution. Prep once, cook twice, and enjoy delicious, macro-friendly meals all week long. The food struggle is real. You want to eat well-balanced meals that taste good. You want to make most of your meals at home, but don't want to be a slave to your kitchen. You know you should be eating more protein, but don't know how in the world to get it in. You're overwhelmed with just choosing a recipe you have saved, so you end up getting takeout again. Insert Well Prepped, a guide I created to take the guesswork out of efficiently making delicious, macro-friendly meals. This guide provides you with 8 weeks of recipes. Each week, you'll prep once for 30 minutes, cook twice, and then enjoy eating all week. That's right, the two recipes will make you a total of 6 meals. I even made Instacart links for all the weekly groceries you'll need so you don't even need to think about grocery shopping. I'm all about saving time, money, and mental energy when it comes to feeding my family healthy meals, and now I get to share that with you. Grab your copy of Well Prepped at aishazaza.com. And from my kitchen to yours, cheers to eating well and being well prepped. Welcome to the Mindset Mile podcast, the show that'll leave you empowered to take action towards becoming the turned up version of your already awesome self. I'm your host, Aisha Zaza, and I'm so glad you're here. Let's go. Hello, friend. Welcome back to another episode of the Mindset Mile podcast. I have special guest Michelle Grosser here today, and I am so excited for what she is going to teach us and talk to us about in regulating the nervous system in all the areas of our life. So Michelle, please say hi and introduce yourself. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. My name is Michelle Grosser, and I live in Miami with my husband and my two girls. They're 5 and 7. And for the better part of the last, 15 years now, I've been a trial attorney. So I have been litigating cases and managing a full caseload. And then at the beginning of the pandemic, I think like so many people, I just had this, I think the space for the first time to really take a look at what my life looked like, the pace, the work-life balance, all the different things, and start asking myself some really tough questions like, is this actually what I want to be doing, right? Why am I doing these things? Is this sustainable? How can we change some things up here in this space or the gift that the pandemic kind of offered to me? And in that time, I was just noticing all of the women in my circle really with the same complaints, right? I mean, so many of us can relate, but our kids are home from school. We're with our partners 24/7, incredible amounts of stress and transition and people really going through it. And I just felt such a call to help. And I was a lawyer. I had no idea, like I had no training in therapy or any kind of thing like that. And I'm like, man, I'm going to like become a life coach. So just so I have skills to really help women, I thought I was just going to get some skills. And I signed up for a year-long master coach certification program. And what I didn't realize is that I wasn't just coming out with skills, but really my whole paradigm, I think, of life and my purpose and how I was doing things was shifted in such a profound way. I realized I was in such a deep state of burnout. I realized that I had so many labels on things that I thought were good or bad or weak or strong, particularly around, you know, my profession and my own emotions and my, you know, being strong and all of these different things that we identify or we identify with. And so I started a podcast called The Calm Mom, and that really led to me connecting with so many women struggling with anxiety, overwhelm, and burnout. And as I really started to study, I took a whole year. What I found was that the underlying thread through all of it was dysregulation in our nervous system. So since then, that's really been my passion, is studying it and helping women understand how to regulate their nervous systems, particularly when it comes to managing anxiety, overwhelm, and burnout. And that's what I do today. It's what I'm so passionate about, and it's what I'm here to talk about.
And this, I'm so excited to hear everything that you have to say, because when I found you, I was like, how have I not heard of anyone
talking about this or coaching it. I wanted everyone to know who you were before I even actually connected with you, because I feel like this is such an important topic for people to understand, that the value of working on, right? Like the value of pouring into yourself so you can show up, especially as a parent and as a mom. Yes, very, very excited for what you have to share. So explain to us a little bit about the nervous system and what you mean when you say nervous system dysregulation. How does that impact our emotional, physical, and mental well-being?
Yeah, that's so good. So our nervous system is really our body's command central, right? It's all of the messaging that's going on in our body. And what the science is showing is that actually 90%, up to 98% of what we do every day, so the thoughts that we have and the actions that we take and the words that we speak, all of these things are unconscious, right? And they're just patterns and conditioning that we've been doing for so long. And our nervous system is really driving so much of this. So it's all the messaging going on in our body, the command center that's controlling the things we think, the things we say, and the things we do. And when we talk about a dysregulated nervous system, I guess let's kind of back up and talk about what it means to have a regulated nervous system. We say regulated, and I think oftentimes when that gets thrown around, we think like just being calm, right? And I even struggled with the name of my podcast because it's called The Calm Mom. And I'm like, man, I don't want to be part of this, I think, perpetuation of this idea that women or moms in particular have to be calm all the time, or we should be shooting to be calm all the time, because that's actually not a very healthy nervous system, right? If we want to be spurred into action, if there's something that we have to do, we don't want to be calm in those situations. But having a regulated nervous system means that we have a resilient nervous system. It means that we have the capacity to deal with all of the ups and all of the downs that come at us, right? Because life will keep on lifing, but we don't get stuck there. We don't get stuck in the sympathetic energy of being anxious or activated or edgy or irritable or angry. And we also don't get stuck in the burnout or the disconnection or the dissociation or the spacing out or the numbing out. We have tools to be able to bring our nervous system from the ups and the downs back to our center. And a nervous system that is resilient in that sense, a nervous system that can handle life without being stuck in either of those two extremes, is a regulated nervous system. So when we talk about being dysregulated, we're really talking about being stuck in, I think the common way we talk about it is in fight or flight, which is that sympathetic circuit of our nervous system, or being stuck feeling very disconnected from our body, where we experience things like burnout or dissociation. And that's like the other circuit where we talk about being dysregulated, called the dorsal vagal collapse.
I think this is very interesting, and I'm eager to hear how you coach people through, or what you teach on disassociating the feeling of dysregulation from your identity as a parent or who you are. Because often I will experience this narrative in my head that says, I must not be a good parent because I can't handle how flooded I feel sometimes with the just frustration or the irritation or, you know, the fight or flight feeling that you get. And oftentimes I think the problem is me as a person, as opposed to my coping skills. So how do you teach people, or what do you say to that exactly? Like, how do you help someone disassociate from the feelings that they're having from who they actually are and how they are as a parent?
Oh, that's such a good question. And you're definitely not alone in that. I think all of us can resonate. I think the first thing that I'll say is that when it comes to the nervous system, and then I'll kind of talk about that guilt part and the separating ourselves from that. When it comes to our nervous system, we all have what's called a window of tolerance. So we all have a capacity within which our nervous system can handle stimulation, however that looks like, before it drives us in to dysregulation. So as moms, we obviously have a lot coming at us all the time, right? Not to mention, like, if we're working, right? Everything that's going on with that, our phones, the mental load, managing the household. If we have a partner, we're in relationships. There's just so much coming at us on top of parenting. And when we're not resourcing ourselves well, and what I mean by that is sometimes it's obvious things like, are we eating? Are we hydrating? Are we moving our bodies, right? Are we getting enough quality sleep? Those kind of are the obvious things that come forward when we talk about resourcing ourselves and taking care of ourselves. But there's so much more to that, right? There's things like, you know, what kind of boundaries do we have? What does our emotional hygiene look like, right? How do we manage big emotions? How do we handle stress? And all of these different things impact the width of that window of tolerance. So there are some days, and you can probably relate, we wake up and like everything just kind of seems easy, even though it isn't, right? Like we get cut off in traffic and we're like, no big deal, right? We get to the office, we do our stuff, our kid has a meltdown, we get to the car, we're like, dang, I handled that like a champ, right? On those days, we're well resourced. Our nervous system has a really wide window of tolerance. We can handle a lot without becoming dysregulated. But there are other days where we're not so well resourced. Might be because of things we are aware of or not, right? It could be things we're not even aware of. But they have shrunk our window of tolerance. And because of that, the same exact thing can drive us to dysregulation. It can drive us to snapping on our kids or, you know, road rage or however that shows up. So the first part of it is just understanding, I think, that beneath all of our triggers and however that shows up, that there's a reason for it, right? Why is my window of tolerance today feel really narrow? Why does it feel like every little thing is kind of setting me off today? And I think then that can open up a place of curiosity and we can be like, oh yeah, Michelle, like you have this big thing coming up at work and it's causing you a lot of stress, or, you know, your husband did something yesterday and it really ticks you off and you haven't talked to him about it yet. And we can start to get to some of the root issues. And then I think when it comes to this feeling of like, man, I must not be a good parent because I just can't handle this right now, right? Or I didn't respond how I would have preferred, or my kids don't deserve that, or whatever kind of story comes up for us. I think two things. One, I think I hearken back to one of my favorite things to say and to teach is when we get to a place where we can, and when this becomes automatic, it's so powerful. Shift instead of judging ourselves for however it is that we showed up, to shift to that curiosity. So I say curiosity over judgment, curiosity before judgment. Man, I didn't want to yell at my kids, but instead of getting judgmental at myself for that, how can I be curious? Man, why did I do that? What led up to that, right? What am I not dealing with? Why do I feel so snappy today? And just coming at it from a place of curiosity really helps us to also approach it from a place of compassion. And that's where we have access to the parts of our brain that allow us to actually think these things through rationally, right? And see things from different perspective. And that's where growth happens. And that's where change happens. And that's where we can repair with our kids and all the beautiful things that come from that. And then I think the second part of it is that when it comes to feelings of guilt, particularly like mom guilt, how I like to coach around that is that I think there's two kinds of guilt. And the way that I phrase it or frame it is that I think there's productive guilt and there's unproductive guilt. So when I'm feeling guilty, I just stop for a second. I'm like, okay, Michelle, is that productive or is that unproductive? Productive guilt is a signal to me that I am acting or I have acted out of integrity with who I say I am or how I want to show up. So if I snap at my kids or my husband and I feel guilty about that, to me, that's productive guilt because that's pulling me back into alignment of who I want to be, the mom I want to be, the wife I want to be, right? How I want to show up. And it's calling me forward and it's calling me higher. And I can do something with productive guilt, right? I can say I'm sorry. I can apologize. I can ask for forgiveness. I can show up differently the next time. And I think that's really productive. But when we get stuck in unproductive guilt, and a lot of times that can be, you know, stuck in comparison or what happens when we're on social media or on Pinterest or all of these different things, then it's a practice of learning how to recognize first, okay, this is not productive guilt. And then a practice of learning how to release it, right? How to work through it and how to be able to truly release it. And then I think the other thing I'm kind of hearing in that, and if you want to talk about it, we can, but it's kind of like the voice of that inner critic. So many of us, especially in our motherhood, it's really that voice is really quick to pop up and tell us, you know, we're not worthy, we're not doing things right, our kids deserve more, or whatever it is. And I think that's a little bit of a different approach.
What does that different approach look like?
Yeah. So when it comes to any internal criticism, whether you're hard on yourself or you're critical or you have that voice that kind of pops up and likes to remind you of all these things, maybe it's even like imposter syndrome. I think so often the impulse is to try to quiet that voice. And I think that that's often what we hear or are told or are taught, like we need to, you know, tell that voice to be quiet, tell it, you know, don't believe the lies, tell it, just calm it down, quiet, shut it up, right? Suppress it, make it stop. But what I've found over and over and over again is that when I work with women who try to do that, what happens is that voice actually gets louder. And it's this idea that what we resist persists, not just with our inner critic, but anything really, right? So if we're constantly resisting that inner critic, it's going to persist. So what I recommend instead, and the invitation, if you're listening to this and you struggle with an inner critic, it goes back to curiosity, is to really start to get curious about why that inner critic is so critical. And what I found with like 100% rate all the time, every single time, is that that inner critic was voiced, it was birthed, it came to be for a reason, right? At some point in your life, your subconscious was like, man, if I'm critical, that pushes her to be more motivated or more productive or better. And what does that do ultimately? It ensures safety and approval of her caregivers, our parents, right? We always want to please our parents. So at some point, that voice developed in our subconscious within us to help drive us forward. So it had a highest intention. It's actually for our own good. And a lot of times the age that that voice started to develop, so if we were 8, let's say, right? And we did really well on, I don't know, we got an A on some paper, and then we got all of this approval and love and safety from our parents, and our nervous system was like, yes, more of this, right? And then we came home a week later and we had gotten an F on the spelling test or something. Oh, that's a good opportunity for that inner critic to pop in and be like, man, you should have gotten an A. When you get an A, all of these good things happen. And what happens is then 30 years later or whatever, we have children, and that inner critic we hear still sounds like a child. It still sounds like our 8-year-old self. So it doesn't have much grace, right? It might be quite blunt in what it's trying to say to us. And it sounds really harsh, but it's just that it's not particularly evolved. So what we want to do is to be able to connect with it. And you can do this through journaling. You can do this in literally just sitting down and kind of accessing that inner voice and having an inner dialogue and be like, hey, like, what is it that you want me to know? I think I understand that you just want what's best for me, but can we shift, instead of like all of this criticism, can we shift this to be like, maybe you could be my cheerleader, right? Maybe you could be a voice of encouragement instead of a voice of criticism, still going through, you know, the same end, right? For me to do my best and show up my best and give my best. And I find that that's a much more effective approach to something like an inner critic than trying to continue to suppress it and push it aside and deny it.
First of all, I love everything that you're saying, and I can't wait to start applying all of this in my life personally. And I know my audience is probably hanging at the edge of their seat too, because it's like more and more. What I want to know is, a lot of what I'm hearing, it sounds like these are kind of retrospect thoughts, right? Like, oh, I overreacted. And then you can act from a place of curiosity. How do you deal with the dysregulation in the moment? Like, what are some actual tools that people can use when they're feeling fight or flight, or they're feeling super irritated or short-tempered, or they don't have the patience, right? Like, those are all things that we want to be better at dealing with in the moment, as well as better the next time, you know, by reflecting on how, what might have gone wrong in our day to get us to that point. What are some in the moment tools that we could use?
Okay, so that's so good. So before we talk about that, it's important to understand something about our nervous system. And it's that our nervous system does not speak a verbal language. So maybe you've experienced before some sense of dysregulation where, like, I don't know, you're going to pitch a business idea, or you're going to speak publicly and like your heart's racing, right? And your breathing changes and your palms are sweaty. And you can tell yourself verbally, Michelle, just calm down, chill out. You've got this, you're prepared. And that will help to a certain extent, but our heart's still racing and, you know, it's still hard to speak and our voice is cracking and all of these things. And it's because of just that. Our nervous system does not speak a verbal language. Our body doesn't speak a verbal language. So when we want to communicate safety, which ultimately is what our system is seeking to allow us to get to a place of calm and regulation, to our body, we have to do it in a way that it understands. And how do we do that? We do that through movement. We do it through breath. We do it through sound. And we do it through gentle and appropriate touch. So having tools within like each of those four realms, really, in the moment when we notice we're starting to feel dysregulated, can be super powerful. And a lot of times the practices that I teach really only take maybe like 60 to 90 seconds of doing it before you'll notice a shift in your nervous system. So the first thing, and you kind of alluded to this, is awareness. So we have to be aware that we're starting to kind of get into that zone of dysregulation, right? Like I'm starting to feel frustrated with my kids. I'm starting to get annoyed about something. I'm starting to feel like edgy or irritable or anxious or angry or whatever it is. We have to notice so then we can do something about it. So I start by teaching my clients how to start recognizing what we call our somatic cues. How's our body telling us that we're kind of starting to approach this place of dysregulation? So maybe you guys can relate to some of this, but for me, I know that when my body is communicating to me, hey, I'm feeling dysregulated here, it's tension. I have tension in my jaw. Like I'll wake up and my jaw is so tight. I'll have tension in my shoulders and my neck. Like I'm kind of just walking around wearing my shoulders as earrings. Maybe it's headaches. Maybe it's gut issues. A lot of things like IBS, gas, autoimmune conditions. Those are all rooted in dysregulation in our nervous system. You're having trouble sleeping, insomnia, brain fog, aches and unexplained like aches and pains in our joints. A lot of these things are symptoms and signals that, hey, there's something going on with our nervous system that we need to pay attention to. So the more we can start to grow in awareness and catch it, then we can do something about it. So some of the in the moment things, our nervous system responds really well to temperature changes. So that is something that, like you hear about cold plunges, right? Everyone's like doing cold plunges right now and it makes them feel so good. That's because it's a temperature change and that activates our vagus nerve, which is the nerve responsible in our body for bringing a sense of calm and bringing our nervous system back to that place of presence. So if you don't have a cold plunge, like I don't have a cold plunge at my house, but you can use anything, right? You can take sometimes I'll just go to the freezer and I'll grab a bag of like frozen vegetables and I'll just hold it on the back of my neck and I'll just breathe for like a minute and that helps bring me back. Holding ice cubes in your hands, rubbing them on the inside of your wrist, taking a warm shower or a hot bath, all of those temperature changes can be really soothing to our nervous system. Our body also needs movement, right? We're on a show right now called The Mindset Mile. We know how important it is to move our bodies. So getting daily movement, I teach like some foundational things for nervous system health. That's one of them. But in the moment, just releasing a lot of pent up energy. Like if you're someone who tends to be anxious or like have a lot of that activating energy in you, there's something called shaking, which is exactly what it sounds like literally just standing up and shaking out your whole body, shaking your hands, your arms, your legs, just kind of wiggling for a minute or two, or put on your favorite song and just dance for a minute or two. You'll actually notice, right? Like you can't be anxious and dancing. There's just something that happens when we move our bodies that's very regulating. And then also breath. If you do breath work, you know the power of it. If you don't, and this is new for you, you can probably just go on YouTube and be like 5-minute breath work, you know, to calm for anxiety or whatever it is. There's so many out there. There's so many different breathing techniques. But my favorite one, and the one that I think is the most powerful and great because it's so quick, is called a physiological breath. And you literally just breathe in through your nose as deep as you can breathe. And when it feels like you get to the top of your breath, you take one more quick in through your nose and then slowly out through your mouth. And just doing that 2 or 3 times, man, it's so interesting how you'll start to notice your nervous system shift in just 15 or 20 seconds. So there are so many regulating resources in the moment. Those are a few of my favorites. But the goal is really to find a few that work for you and being able to have them kind of in your back pocket. So you notice when you need them, you can use them and bring yourself back to a place of regulation.
Thank you for saying all those, because in many of my episodes, I have stressed the importance of just like getting out of your environment, you know, whether you work in a building and just taking a lap around the parking lot, even if that's what you have access to, or just doing 15 air squats, even. I think these things, they sound too simple and too almost silly to work. And even I've been in scenarios where I just feel like there's nothing that can help me right now, right? But when I do actually employ some of these things that you just shared, it's so fascinating how you can actually feel a slight shift. And it's not, you know, what I also feel like I want to make people aware. It's not like you're going to just be, you're going to go from like absolutely frustrated and like a 10 mad to just like, oh, Mary Poppins. And like, you know, you're not going to, it's not going to change, right? Like who you are as a person in that moment. The shift is slight, but that's really all I think it takes to just manage the situation a little better. Like I had a moment this morning where I did it and I had to take a few deep breaths. And I was also telling myself, I said, I'm a good parent who's having a hard time right now. And I said that four times in a row. And I felt the tension that you described, like in my chest and in my shoulders. I felt my body start to relax just the slightest. Yeah. And it was such a relief from that just edge, right? So for the person that's not a parent, maybe they're an entrepreneur or they're in a high stress work environment, how does regulating their nervous system help them show up as a better business owner or help someone just achieve their professional goals?
That's a great question. So when it comes to, when we talk about being dysregulated, our nervous system's primary function always and forever will be our safety. It will always prioritize our safety. So if we are in a state of fight or flight, right? If we are in a dysregulated state, our nervous system isn't really good at differentiating between a real threat and a perceived threat. So in our evolution, right? Let's think, you know, thousands of years ago, our nervous system would perceive a threat. There's like, I don't know, a lion that jumps out of the brush, right? And then we would respond to that threat. So our nervous system would kick us into that sympathetic state so we could run or fight the threat, right? Fight or flight. And then eventually we would do that. We would run away or we would fight the lion and we would get back to our people and we'd like process it with them and we would eat and we would sleep and that stress cycle would complete, right? We would experience a stressor. We would deal with the stressor. We would deal with the stress on our body because we would actually move and we would be able to alchemize all of those hormones and chemicals that are released and then return to our baseline stress level. But today, 2024, right? Our stressors are so different. And not only that, but they're chronic, right? It's like chronic stress of work. If you are a parent, it's a chronic stress of parenthood, the chronic stress of all of the things that we have to do every single day. So what happens is we experience stressors at such a level without ever being able to complete that stress loop and return back to baseline stress level. So it's an email that comes up. It feels stressful. It sends us into fight or flight, but we do nothing in our body to indicate that that stressor has resolved and we can come back to baseline stress level. So we're just increasingly holding all of this stress and our body stays stuck in this fight or flight. And to answer your question, when we are stuck in a state of fight or flight, our nervous system is, because we're prioritizing our safety and our survival, we will actually close down, like our body will temporarily pause any non-essential function. So that means things like our digestive system will be paused, our reproductive system will be paused, our immune system will be paused because none of those things are necessary, you know, to run from some sort of threat. And that's why when we find we're stuck in fight or flight for so long, we show up with infertility or we show up with, you know, gut issues and our digestion is impacted and we're getting sick all of the time. And it's because our body's prioritizing safety and survival and those other systems are being impacted. But the biggest one I think that we notice on the day-to-day is that it impacts the function of our brain. So when we're in fight or flight, we're in our survival brain. And all we're doing is looking out for threats. So we become hypervigilant, right? And we're kind of on alert and we're worrying and the anxiety is high and we're watching, you know, the looping thoughts are coming through and it's kind of hard to get out of that. But when we're in that survival brain, we don't have access to our prefrontal cortex, which is the part of our brain that is responsible for the parts, I think, of us that make us the best entrepreneurs and the best business leaders and the best communicators. That's the part of our brain that's responsible for logic and analyzing things and our highest levels of communication. It's a part of our brain that allows us to see things from different perspectives, a part of our brain that allows us to be creative, right? And access creativity, which is so important for high level leadership. So when we're stuck in fight or flight, with a dysregulated nervous system, it's literally impacting how we think and how we speak and how we make decisions. It's almost like we're wearing glasses, right? And we're seeing everything through this filter or this lens of dysregulation, and we're not actually able to think and see clearly. So learning how to get ourselves out of fight or flight and complete that stress cycle so we can have access to our prefrontal cortex is really game-changing in high-level leadership, entrepreneurship, and any space we want to show up powerfully.
That is so powerful. How do you see some of these high-level or high-achieving people practice this on a day-to-day, besides like breath work and stuff? What does this like long-term look like?
Yeah. So I think a lot of it is, it kind of takes me back to that year where I was in that program. It's like unlearning so many things that we've just been patterned and conditioned to. So I think big picture, it's really taking a look at, you know, what kind of things have we identified as being part of our personality that are actually coping mechanisms or defense strategies for other things going on in our life. So for me, for example, you know, if we're really high achieving or we're busy 24/7 or we're doing things all the time, we can be really quick to just identify those things as part of our personality. But those are all coping mechanisms because for some reason, our body doesn't feel safe. Our nervous system doesn't feel safe unless we do those things, right? So like really reworking and relooking at all of that. And I think what comes with that is that we're going to see that the pace that we're probably operating every day isn't particularly sustainable, right? So really taking a look at like, what do my boundaries look like? Is it, and asking, is it true? Like, I think so many of us are conditioned to believe that we have to work really, really hard, right? Like 18 hours a day in order to build an empire. And it's like, when we sit back and we're like, man, is that really true? Like, how can I do less, but do it better? How can I, you know, delegate? How can I delete so much of this stuff that I'm actually not using my time well, but it feels good to like check off my list. I think big picture stuff like that is really powerful. And then foundationally, the three things that I teach for like overall nervous system health is getting movement in every single day. I know you're on board with that. So important. The next thing is stillness. Can you have a daily stillness practice? And what I mean by that is not necessarily meditation or breath work, but like, do you have time built into your day where your nervous system is not being stimulated? Where your phone is away, right? Where you're not listening to a podcast or an audiobook on the drive, where you can just be with your thoughts. And our nervous system needs that space because that's also, it's also like exercising a muscle. We're teaching ourselves how to be grounded and how to be still. And that's so important. And then the third thing, and it's my favorite because I think it's so underutilized that we don't understand it, is that we've got to incorporate daily play. Mm-hmm. And not like just playing with our kids, but just things that like, what are we passionate about? What lights us up? Hobbies? Like, do we like to bake? Do we like to paint? Do we like to play out, you know, play soccer? Like whatever it is, not losing that when we become an adult, not losing that when we become a mom, because it's really powerful in keeping our system feeling safe, feeling loved, which ultimately allows us to be regulated.
Wow. There was so much there that was very affirming. I just love everything that you talked about because it echoes so much of what I've tried to teach too, just through my own personal experiences. Yeah. I have not done a life coaching course like you did, but it was just really affirming to hear that like these things that feel like they might take so much like time and effort and change to make really don't take that much. Like all you have to do is like, not all you have to do. I make it sound so simple, but I'm really big on boundaries. And since becoming a mother, I think the biggest thing that I've had to learn is managing my expectations of like what I am able to get done, what I feel like I should be able to get done. And a big lesson in that is like less is more everywhere in my life. And because I've adopted that mindset, I'm constantly looking at my boundaries and what the pillars are in my life that make my life and me the best, right? Like what are the most important things? Everything else, I don't have time. I don't have space for. And I really love the way that you articulated all of that. And I really hope that it helps who is listening to this because I find it so just meaningful and impactful.
Yeah. There's a part of it that is intuitive. I think we just have to like give ourselves a space to kind of figure it out. Because you're right, you don't need any special training. Like, you know, I talk to people and they're like, oh yeah, it makes so much sense. Like we all intuitively crave these things, but to just make space for it, it's beautiful.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. One of my New Year's resolutions was to get back to doing some therapy. And I'm really proud of myself to have gotten that ball rolling because I always feel like I show up as a much better version of myself when I'm paying attention to and putting in work to improve my relationship with myself as well as those closest to me. A common misconception about therapy is that it's for people who have experienced major trauma, but it's a really powerful tool to help learn positive coping skills, how to articulate your feelings and needs, and how to set boundaries. BetterHelp is entirely online and is designed to be convenient and flexible. So if you've been thinking of therapy, now's a great time to try BetterHelp. Become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit betterhelp.com/mindsetmile today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/mindsetmile.
Talk to us a little bit about personality patterns. So, and how does one find or figure out, I should say, their personality type, and then also use those strengths to their advantage?
Yeah. So there is, I have a quiz on my website because I learned about personality patterns and became so, you know, went down the rabbit hole and became kind of obsessed with them. But it's all based on a book written by Stephen Kessler. It's called The 5 Personality Patterns. But he basically argues that there are 5 personality patterns, and they're not necessarily like, it's like not like the Enneagram or the Myers-Briggs, where we like fit into this personality type per se, but it's kind of things that we've taken on since childhood, again, as coping mechanisms that over time became habits and then over time became what we think of as part of our personality. So there's five different personality patterns. If you want me, I can like go through them briefly.
Yeah, I'm fascinated.
People will probably identify.
I'm curious.
Okay. So there's 5. They all originate in different ways. It's so fascinating because they're even associated with a particular body type. Like you'll see that people that tend to look the same way in their body structure will follow the same pattern. It's fascinating. And then the beautiful thing is because it's not an actual pattern, but rather something that we've taken on, once we learn to identify our pattern, we can actually learn to heal it. And we get to keep the gifts that came with that pattern, but we can kind of release a lot of the, I don't know, the weight or the garbage or kind of the struggle that comes with that pattern. And we can grow through it to be living more authentically, I think. So the 5 patterns, the first one is the leaving pattern. And you probably run this pattern if like at the first sign of struggle or discomfort or whatever, you just dip out. Like if you notice that you're the one that like has left a lot of relationships the minute that they get hard, you're just like, forget it, I'm out of here. If when you tend to be, you know, in a fight or disagreement with someone, if that is your go-to, like I'm just out of here, I walk out of the room or I leave the house, maybe you run the leaving pattern. Maybe you've quit a lot of jobs, right? The minute it gets hard, your tendency is when your nervous system feels overwhelmed or stressed, you just dip out. And that's the leaving pattern. The next pattern is called the merging pattern. And you might tend to run this pattern again when you feel stressed and overwhelmed. And all of this is unconscious, right? We don't consciously do these things. The merging pattern, you are probably really gifted at bringing people together and hosting them. But when you feel very stressed and overwhelmed in your nervous system, you kind of show up as this people pleaser. So you're constantly looking out for everyone else and making sure all of their needs are met. Maybe you were even parentified as a child and you had to take care of your parents or your caregivers. So now you're an adult and you're like always looking out for everyone else, making sure they're good. If they're not good, you can't be good kind of thing. We kind of run in these codependent patterns. So that's the merging pattern. The third one is the enduring pattern. And it's exactly what the name sounds like. When you're stressed and overwhelmed, you just hunker down and you endure, right? Like you can make it through anything. You're probably the friend in your friend group that everyone like dumps all of their drama on because you're a really good listener. You just hold it all. You probably don't express your emotions. You just kind of hold everything in. You're super grounded. You're super stable, but you're just like, you endure. You're kind of like, I always think about like Eeyore on Winnie the Pooh. Like everything is just like, you're just kind of going along your own way, enduring everything that's coming your way. And then the fourth pattern is called the aggressive pattern. So you might run this pattern if you tend to be more on the aggressive side. So maybe when we talk about fight or flight, like if your inclination when you're feeling stressed or overwhelmed in your nervous system is to, you know, pick a fight, you're not afraid to, you know, speak your mind and disagree. You're someone who can, you know, quickly raise their voice. Maybe you have a bit of a temper. That could be the pattern that you tend to run. And then the last one is called the rigid pattern. And this is the pattern that I've tended to run. And if you run the rigid pattern, you're someone who has probably identified as being very high achieving, very driven by accolades and how everything looks on the outside. You're a rule follower. It drives you crazy when other people like don't follow the rules or do things that they're supposed to do. You're very much driven by the outside, right? Like you tell me what I'm supposed to do and I'll do it. And we have very little connection to our intuition, very little like connection to what we actually want and our own desires and our own needs. And it looks good on the outside. So it kind of keeps getting reinforced, but we get to be to this place where so often if you run this pattern, you're really disconnected from like your life. Like, how did I get here? What am I doing this? Does this even bring me joy? Because we're so focused on doing what everything and everyone says we should do. So those are the five patterns. I don't know if you recognize, if any of those like resonate with you or what your thoughts are, but it's really fascinating.
That is very fascinating. What was the book called?
It's called The Five Personality Patterns.
Oh, okay. That's pretty straightforward.
Super, super easy.
I'm interested in learning more about this because yeah. I feel like knowing, you know, peeling back the onion in that way and kind of getting to the root of why you operate a certain way, for me, that helps me understand kind of my own so little much. Heritage, right? Like, and I can be empathetic towards myself a little easier when I understand like
that's right.
why I operate the way I do. So I am definitely going to look into that. That's really
yeah. Fun. And if you go to michellegrosser.com/quiz, that's a great place to start too, because it's like a 2-minute quiz. But on the landing page of each personality pattern, I have it like all mapped out, how it shows up, how it probably originated, what you can do about it. So that's super fascinating to read.
One last thing I heard you talk about earlier, and I wanted to elaborate, or I wanted you to elaborate a little bit more on, is when someone feels like they're just truly burnt out, that sounds and kind of feels to me like a bigger issue than just like, okay, what can I do in this moment to help myself? How can someone really identify that they're in like a true burnout where they need a full U-turn, and what can they do to get themselves out of that?
Yeah, you are exactly right. So when it comes to burnout, let's talk about, I guess, some of the symptoms, and then we'll talk about, you know, how I think we start to heal our way out of that. You know, we've all had a rough night's sleep, or there's something going on, our kids are sick or whatever it is, and we're like tired, but then we sleep well for a couple of days and we're just back at it. Burnout is different, right? Burnout is like, you just have this like to your bones level of exhaustion. You wake up tired, no matter how much sleep you get, you just cannot get back to that place of feeling like you have your full energy. There's also, you know, other mental and emotional side effects or symptoms of burnout. So maybe you just kind of feel flat. Maybe you just kind of feel like the things that you used to be passionate about or excited about don't do it for you anymore. You can't like muster up the energy to do it. Hanging out with your friends or like your family just kind of feels like a chore. Everything feels like so much work. So you just start to isolate and withdraw. A lot of times things like brain fog, you're really lacking like a mental clarity, forgetfulness, can be signs of burnout. And, in our physical body also, like a lot of the things I talked about earlier, but just unexplained aches and pains, you're getting sick all the time. You can tell your nervous system, your immune system are just kind of run down. Your adrenals feel shot. You know, something is off. Those are good indicators. Your sleep is being impacted, that you're experiencing burnout. And I actually have a 6-step framework to recovering from burnout. The first one is learning how to complete that stress cycle that we talked about. So learning how to close that loop and bring your body to a place of regulation through movement, through sound, through touch, and through a lot of the habits that we've talked about. And then on the second step, we take a look at our coping mechanisms, because we got to burnout for a reason, right? So we can't keep doing the same things that we were doing and expecting to get out of burnout or to heal burnout. So taking a look at, like you were talking about, like how am I spending my days, right? What does it look like when I wake up in the morning until I go to bed? What am I doing? And why am I doing these things? And how can I put parameters around them to really protect my space and my healing? And then we take a look at boundaries and boundaries that we need to set to protect ourselves and that healing space. And boundaries, I think, are something that a lot of us misunderstood, or at least I did for a long time. I thought I needed to have boundaries around other people. But I learned, and now I teach, that, you know, boundaries are really only for me, right? Regardless of what other people do, it's how I'm going to respond, what I'm going to say, how I'm going to act. So really taking a look at where we can put some boundaries around. I teach around our attention, around our bandwidth, around our behavior, and even around our inner child. So like our subconscious parts, how can we put boundaries around each of those four areas? And then we look at emotional regulation. So often when we don't have practices to deal with our emotions, especially our big emotions like anger or grief or frustration, if we don't have practices in place to deal with those in a healthy way and we kind of suppress them and we hold them in, that is a huge driving force that contributes to burnout that we don't really realize. So understanding, I think anger in particular, I've noticed that women and moms just don't know what to do with anger. I think for men, it's a lot more accepted for them to be angry or upset about things. But for us, you know, we're crazy, or it's like, we don't even want to go there. So learning what to do with anger is a huge one. And we find a lot of healing in that. And then a lot of work around our mindsets. So taking a look at the paradigms that we're holding that help, that led us to burnout to begin with, how we can start to shift some of those, and really taking a look at where in our life, I think that we're playing some roles that contributed to our burnout. So where are we playing kind of a victim role? Where are we playing a worker or a doer role that we've just like worked ourselves straight into burnout? And how can we shift a lot of that? So to your point, yeah, it's not just like an in the moment thing, but it's comprehensive, right? It's a look at your whole lifestyle, your whole way of being, and really just making these little tweaks here and there, kind of like that 1% thing, right? If I can change 1% today in my trajectory away from burnout, over time, over 6 weeks, over 8 weeks, there's this huge difference.
Wow. That was amazing. I'm so excited that you shared all of that. How can people work with you? Where can we find you? Tell us more.
Sure. So my website is just my name, michellegrosser.com. Everything is there. We have a group program that's all about recovering from burnout. So it's a 7-week program to heal your burnout. And you can find other information about what we do there. And then my podcast is a great resource. It's called The Calm Mom. And really all we focus on is different strategies to regulate our nervous system. So sometimes it's in those micro in the moment, and sometimes it's the big picture, you know, lifestyle habits. But we have great resources on there. It's all free. And so much of this stuff too, in regulating your nervous system, we already have what we need, right? You don't need to go out and buy stuff. You don't need to spend a ton of money. It's just learning how to use the tools that you already have. So my website and my podcast, those are the best ways to connect with me.
Michelle, I feel like the work that you're doing is so important. And thank you so much for coming onto the show and just sharing all that knowledge. I could have gone on much longer, but the podcast tolerance, I think, is a max of, you know, 45 to 60 minutes. So I just can't wait to check out more of your podcast. I'm sure my listeners will too. And we'll definitely be giving you a follow on social media, which, by the way, what is your Instagram handle?
Yeah, it's michellegrosser.coach.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you so much, Michelle. I can't wait to chat with you again, and make it a great day.